Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
As I mentioned, I've been a little bit, I'm a little bit nervous to have this conversation. As I've said, Andrew Fox has become a very dear friend over the last couple of years, but he has, I'm scared this is going to be an I told you so discussion. And he does have every right because he really thought this whole Iran, the whole Iran approach and the Iran strategy was folly, and certainly seems to be turning out exactly that way. Major Andrew Fox, a very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. I hope you're well.
Good morning, Howard. And don't worry, it's not going to be too much. Told you so. It's going to. I've done all that already.
Haven't you? You've
time to talk about the way forward.
But it's actually an important question. Is what were you so bothered by in terms of this war?
Well, I think it was really the early decision not to. Not to make sure Hormuz was secured. You know, I wanted this war to succeed. I supported it at the beginning. I had hopes that the strategy would be sound, but unfortunately it wasn't. It is a mind-blowing error to attack Iran in that manner and not do something about the Strait of Hormuz first. You know, this is a problem that's been known about for decades. There's not a military planet on Earth who's ever studied the Middle East that didn't know about the Strait of Hormuz being a global choke point. And yet they obviously went into this war with an assumption that decapitating the regime on day one would cause its collapse. And that didn't happen. And ever since then, we've been making up strategy as we go along, effectively. And that never works. So that was the real cause of my skepticism about how this was going to end up.
And now we find ourselves in a position that has many of us scratching our heads, trying to figure out what on earth is going on. Rubio seems to have retreated into the foliage in the background, advanced, stepping forward, saying absolutely bizarre things. Is this deliberate? Is this theater? Is this the sign of just complete chaos? What's your thought on it?
Well, we know there are competing camps within the Trump administration. We know the Rubio camp is very different to the Vance camp in their outlook on the world, never mind their outlook on Iran. And I think we're seeing that play out in real time. I mean, and look, there's also the factor here that Trump is desperately trying to make sure that he doesn't take the blame for when this inevitably goes wrong. And so he's quite happy to let his lieutenants fight it out in public amongst themselves. And at the end of it, he can then sort of step in and be the adult in the room, if you will, in how he presents himself. So I think we're seeing, you know, it's just as with Gaza and Israel, you know, domestic politics play an important part in these things. And we're seeing those two things play out in real time, both domestic politics and domestic tensions versus the international situation, which also needs resolution. So I think it's a combination of both domestic and international politics playing out.
How does the U.S. maintain a relationship with Israel, given some of these public statements that they've made?
Well, it depends what you mean by a relationship, because at the political level, obviously there is friction and tension. At a variety of lower and different economic and diplomatic levels, of course, Israel and the United States remain incredibly tight. You know, CENTCOM and the IDF are, you know, march in lockstep. There are vital trade links between the two countries that won't be severed by careless political talk. But I think the challenge, I think, for Israel now is to maintain some kind of political relationship with Washington. There will be American midterms coming up in, I think it's November. There's the Israeli election in October. So we're heading towards a sort of reset anyway. So at the moment, this is really a bit of a blame game, again, by Trump, to try and make sure that he doesn't have the fallout from this terrible MOU land on his lap. So unfortunately, that means that Israel and Bibi have to take a slice of the blame as well as J.D. Vance.
Earlier this morning, I spoke with Dr. Dan Diker from Israel, and his comment was in a situation where allies who are incredibly close have fought shoulder to shoulder against a very significant enemy, to turn on them like this at this stage is horrifying. Give me your reaction to that. Do you see it in those terms, or do you have a alternate view on that?
Well, look, I turn that question around and say, what did you think America First meant? You know, it's not like they've been secret about how they approach the world.
Yes.
And you're experiencing what we went through, you know, a year ago, because obviously we fought shoulder to shoulder with America after 9/11. We left hundreds of dead in Iraq and Afghanistan and thousands of wounded. And that counts for absolutely nothing for the Trump White House. Yeah. Like, America First is exactly what it says on the tin. And Israel was foolish if they thought that there was an Israel exception to America First. So that's why I think America is behaving the way it is. This is the Trump White House. This is how they said they would behave. This is what they said their priorities were, and they're playing it out in real time.
Let's talk about the MOU. I'm not even really sure what it is, because, I mean, yes, at best it is an MOU, but it's really, I'm not sure how much understanding there actually is. Your reaction when you saw it, when you saw the terms?
Disbelief, quite frankly. I mean, I expected it to be bad, and it was even worse than I thought it was going to be. But, and there's a really important but here, an MOU is not a treaty. It's not a binding document. And I think what this really represents is a pause for a number of people. It's an enforced pause on Israel and Lebanon, potentially. Obviously, we haven't had that confirmed yet. It's a pause for Iran, where they're certainly going to buy themselves the time they need, the money they need to rebuild, and to use that money to re-exert their control over the people of Iran. But it is also, potentially, this pause can be used by the good guys. You know, that is a chance. You know, Israel is exhausted after 2.5 years of war. Their decision making is quite frankly getting worse. And I think potentially an enforced ceasefire in Lebanon has its downsides, of course, because Hezbollah will re-infiltrate and rearm. But the IDF can use that pause to make sure they monitor it. You know, it's not going to hold. And it will give a bit of breathing space for the IDF to reconstitute, for Israeli society to reconstitute. It doesn't solve the problem of people not being able to live in the north. That is a huge thing. But you have to, when you're looking at strategy militarily, I think it's really important that people understand this, is you have to set yourself a goal that you have the military means to achieve. And at the moment, the IDF does not have military means to remove Hezbollah from Lebanon completely. It sits outside of a military force. It needs international engagement. It needs proper peacekeeping on the ground, not a joke like UNIFIL. It needs political reform. It needs economic reform to make sure the Shia in Lebanon don't feel so alienated. You know, so this is a huge kind of whole society effort needed, and the IDF can't deliver that. They're an army. So what you have to look at is what you can realistically achieve. And that's the challenge that faces the IDF right now. And pause might help them do that job better.
The number of deaths in terms of the IDF in Lebanon is horrific. It's absolutely, it's daily now.
It is, and I've been speaking to people on the ground in Lebanon, the IDF soldiers who I know that are fighting there, and they tell me horror stories. You know, there was a horrible IED strike on an IDF Humvee the other day. One killed, one wounded. They had to deal with that roadside bomb. And, you know, it's a really tricky quagmire that Israel is potentially in there, because they can take the fight to Hezbollah, but they can't decisively finish them. So if there's a chance of a pause and a reset, it's not perfect, it's not ideal, but it might be better than where we are at this moment in time.
And maybe the fact that Israel will be in a way forced, pressured to maintain some kind of a ceasefire for now might well be the best thing that happens to it in terms of a longer term strategy. That's really what you're saying, because it's a very interesting thing that you can't, that how does, I mean, Israel's not party to this agreement, but might well be obligated by it.
Yeah, and that's the price you pay for subordinating your strategy to Washington for 18 months. Ever since Trump got in, Bibi has very much hitched Israel's wagon to
Absolutely.
that. And it comes with some great positives. Look, remember, Trump, for all his flaws, got the hostages home when nobody else could make that deal. They've handed over the Gaza problem to America. So it's not really the IDF's problem to worry about at this point. It's America calling the shots down there in the south. So, there are some benefits to it, but this is one of the downsides.
So how do you, obviously you don't have a crystal ball and people don't always listen to your advice, but how do you think this is going to play out?
Well, look, I don't have an answer to that, but what I can tell you is the things to look for. And the things to look for is, do these talks in Switzerland ever take place? Does the money get released to the Iranian regime? Does the oil start to flow again through the Strait of Hormuz? That's what we need to look for. When all these things start happening, it gives us warnings and indicators as to the direction of travel of events. And at the moment, it's too soon to say, quite frankly. It's only been a, what, 48 hours since this was all announced. So we just have to sort of work out what we're looking out for, look out for those things, and then we can draw firmer conclusions once things have matured a bit.
Major Andrew Fox, former British Army officer, thank you. As always, thank you for going gently on me.